Chapter 1. Scavenger Vessel Wealth of Kings, the Solar Void. Silonius keyed the shutters to open. They clanked upwards from the viewport, and the light travelled up his chest until he could feel it on his face. He closed his eyes before the sunlight touched them. He waited and then opened his eyelids slowly. The sun sat beyond a circle of gold-tinted crystal. Its light was so bright that it seemed to be pushing out towards him, pulling him in, filling him up as he looked at it. His eyes adapted to the light, reducing the glare to a flat circle of brilliance. He could not remember the sun under which he had been born. He could remember snatches of the past now, pieces of a life lived in war. But the picture was incomplete, and before a certain point, empty. Psychic reconstruction. He had spoken those words to Alpharius. He was what remained from that process. That knowledge had not been a kind revelation. If anything, it left him feeling empty, a body waiting for blood to live. But that was just a fact, a consequence of what he needed to do, what he needed to be. One of the shard blades spun in his fingers as he looked at the sun. He had brought both blades with him from his hiding place beneath the Imperial Palace, and kept them even after he had shed most of his equipment from that phase of the mission. Like the habit he had developed in the last few days of coming to look at the sun from this deserted tower, the blades had remained with him. He blinked slowly at the sun, his mind calculating where they must be from its brightness and position, and that of the distant stars. The Wealth of Kings did not follow a course, so much as weave through the void between Terra and Sol. They had made a brief rendezvous with three other vessels and stopped at a scavenger station built into a scooped-out asteroid. On each occasion, the ship had lingered for only the briefest exchange, and every time, Sork had come to Focron with a new data slate or archive device. Silonius knew what each of the devices contained, and he knew why they were important. That had been one of the gifts of his slowly assembling memory. He was not supposed to know, or rather Focron did not know that he knew. He went suddenly still, the blade motionless in his fingers. He heard heartbeats, a paired rhythm, transhuman. Then he heard a hiss of breath and the near silent glide of movement so fluid that they merged into the rumble of the ship and the pulse of air from the vents. He knew who it was before the Legionnaire spoke.
"We are supposed to confine ourselves to the hangar decks," said Focron.
Silonius turned. The Headhunter Prime was standing a pace away, hands clasped casually behind his back. Like Silonius, he had shed his armor and wound himself in a tattered grey shift. A trailing length of fabric covered his head and the lower half of his face. Focron stepped closer and looked through the viewport.
"The day the Legion confines itself to anything is the day we die," said Silonius.
Focron gave a dry snort and then turned to look directly at Silonius.
"We must talk, brother," he said.
Silonius shrugged. He knew that this encounter would have to happen sooner or later. The Legion trained its warriors to never rely on any weapon or structure that could be changed or destroyed. In training and in battle, they changed function, formation, and even rank constantly. The fact that Silonius had joined Focron's team in mid-operation should have meant nothing. But as with so much theory, and even practice, it failed in the face of realities.
"If you think so, brother," Silonius said,
and waited for a rebuke or challenge. Had he made a mistake? Had he allowed Focron to realize more than he needed to?
"Can you believe that it has come to this? That we are here, fighting this war?" asked Focron,
nodding at the image of the sun beyond the porthole. Silonius kept the surprise from his face and began to reply, but Focron spoke before he could.
"When I was sent to sleep beneath Terra's soil, the galaxy was a different shape. This future was unborn. All the wars that might be were theory and contingency. Now they are reality.
Silonius met the stare and thought of all the mission parameters that must still exist in the mind behind those eyes, all the other shapes of war that a different word could have unlocked. Orpheus, Eurydice, Hades.
It was inevitable, brother, he said. It was always going to come to this. A galaxy crowded with sons of war, building a realm from dust, each different, yet each the same. How else could it have ended?
Fokron let out a breath.
Were you sent here before it began? He asked.
Silonius paused, considering how to answer. He could sense the trap in the question. He had no doubt that Fokron was sincere in his struggle to assimilate the current context of his mission, but he was also using it as a cloak. Should he answer with part of the truth, or an outright lie?
No, he said. I was placed on Terra only a year ago.
We must have expended a lot of assets to achieve that.
No doubt.
I will be honest, brother. My original mission parameter did not include an addition to my team.
The mission had to be augmented, replied Silonius.
The human operatives gave you that information at your waking.
Their orders were updated with the rendezvous location by an emergency method hours before they came to wake us.
Are you asking me why I am here?
Fokron nodded.
If you wish to frame it that way.
I do not know.
I knew what I had to do once I woke. Now I follow you. They stared at each other in silence.
We cannot help it, can we?
Said Fokron after a long moment.
Nothing we do is drawn in straight lines. Nothing can be simple. No truth allowed to stand free.
The simple is easy to subvert, brother. Look at what we have done here already and see that truth. The heart of the Imperium, defended by the Seventh Legion, should be inviolable, indomitable. But here we are.
Yes, we are.
Fokron shook his head.
Sometimes I envy them. The fists, I mean.
Truly?
Silonius did not try and hide the surprise in his voice. Was this another test? Another subtle probing of his nature and purpose?
They were always heaped with more honor than they deserved, rewarded for obviousness and labored effort. But that's not what I'm talking about. They have an identity, a culture. They know who they are and what they are.
He brought up his hand and pulled down the fabric that framed his face and turned it fully towards Silonius. It was the image of Alpharius's face, the mirror of Silonius's own.
And what are we? So many masks worn, so many names, so many secrets that the life beneath is forgotten.
We are what we need to be, said Silonius. To win, we are what we need to be.
Fokron turned to look at the sun and nodded, as though to himself. Silonius waited and then spoke when no reply came.
You know what necessity is, brother. Everything is not about what it should be, but what it needs to be.
You have nothing for me, then? No extra orders, no clarification, no word?
No, said Silonius.
Fokron gave a slow nod. For several seconds, neither of them moved. Then Fokron turned from the viewport so that his back was to it. His eyes began to flick across the shadow of the tower chamber. Silonius realized that while Fokron had spoken, his habitual movements had stilled. Now that ceaseless movement was back, as though a switch had been flicked.
Your secrets are yours to keep, brother. They are not why I am here. I came to find you because the next component of the mission is ready to proceed. We need to prepare.
What is it?
Asked Silonius.
There is a signal relay station in the outer mercurial reaches. We will hit it and destroy it.
Silonius shook his head.
There are dozens of primary relay stations in the inner system reaches alone.
Unless we are going to hit them all.
Destruction is only a secondary effect. The confusion it will cause tertiary.
What is the primary objective?
Asked Silonius. even as the answer whispered at the edge of his memory.
We need to light the beacon. A harrowing is coming, and we are its heralds.
What does harrowing mean?
Asked Incarnus. Miss Madra paused what she was doing and looked at the Psyker. Silence and stillness formed as an answer. They were in a small chamber on the Wealth of Kings' lower decks. Rust mottled its walls, and slowly rotating fans stirred the thick air. Hatches hung open in the three doorways leading off. Miss Madra had come there after the mission briefing, mainly to think, but also to strip and clean all of her gear. Pistols and ammunition lay on the top of an upturned crate, oiled components shining from repeated cleansing. There was a lot to think about. She'd intended to be alone, but after a few moments had looked up to find that she'd been joined in her solitude. What had surprised her was who it was. Hecaron. Stripped of armour, tattooed and branded torso bare above a loose pair of black trews, sat on a crate opposite her. He had nodded at her, grinned and begun to disassemble his bolter. She had nodded back in acknowledgement. They had sat, the quiet broken only by the click, snap and slide of weapons coming apart. Then Incarnus had joined them. She had known it was him without looking up. There was just something in the sound of how he moved. He had sat down on a pile of chains against the wall. When neither she nor Hecaron spoke, Incarnus coughed and licked his lips. She felt her teeth clamp shut. Then he had asked the question.
Harrowing? You do not know the term?
Hecaron said, glancing up from the piece of firing mechanism he was oiling with a cloth. There was a sneer to his grin. He shook his head.
Where did we find you?
Incarnus stiffened.
In the same place you find all the people of rare talent who are willing to fight the Emperor,
snapped the Psyker.
I know the meaning of the word harrowing, but unless our mission is to turn the ground with a plough, the connotations of despoilment and destruction are just vague enough that I find myself at a loss.
Hecaron laughed, the sound booming around the chamber. His bare shoulders shook, the tangled tattoos writhing across muscle.
You have courage, human, I will give you that. I almost like you enough to answer.
He shrugged, placed a piece of the bolter down on the black sheet at his feet, picked up another and began to clean it.
But almost is not enough. You have a good grasp of the word. You have operated for the Legion, so you have seen how we do what we do. Use that rare talent to put the pieces together.
Perhaps I should.
Hissed Incarnus, and Miss Madra felt heat spike the air. Frost formed around Incarnus's eyes. Hecaron grunted. The piece of gun mechanism pinged out of his fingers. Miss Madra felt static wash up her arms, and she began to rise, reaching for her only assembled gun. Hecaron was trying to stand. She could see a flash of red at the edge of his ear. Incarnus was grinning, eyes black boreholes in thin circles of ice as he wrapped his mind around Hecaron. A blur passed her, moving faster than she could track. Incarnus spun into the air, a yell of pain ripping out of his mouth. Her ears popped as a shockwave passed over her. She tasted burnt sugar on her teeth. Hands caught Incarnus as he fell, spun him over and slammed him into the deck. Hecaron gasped from where he had struggled to rise, half fell, and then launched himself across the room.
Peace, brother. Said Silonius, his voice low and utterly calm.
He was standing above the whimpering form of Incarnus, a foot on the Psyker's chest. He was looking at Hecaron, hand raised. Miss Madra had not seen him enter the room. He was just there, as though blinked into being.
He was in my mind,
growled Hecaron, a clotting drop of blood running down his right ear.
I can feel him.
He is an asset, brother, said Silonius. An imperfect tool, but one that we need.
Orne appeared at the door, drawn by the noise. Miss Madra saw him look from Incarnus to Hecaron and then to Silonius. She caught the briefest flicker of eyes, and Orne remained where he was. It was only then that she noticed the gun in Orne's hands, held so casually it had somehow seemed less threatening than its bearer. Silonius tilted his head, focusing on Hecaron. The vein in the warrior's neck was beating beneath the inked scales.
"We need him," said Silonius carefully.
Hecaron clenched his teeth, silver glinting. Then he nodded and turned away. Silonius waited a second, then reached down and pulled Incarnus to his feet. He held him by the throat, casually, as though he were holding a bundle of rags rather than a man. Miss Madra could see his fingers were relaxed, but that they were resting over vertebrae, arteries, and trachea. Incarnus was whimpering, blood flowing from broken teeth and nose in a thick flow down his chin and cheeks. Silonius's fingers did not seem to move, but the psyker suddenly became completely still. His pupils were wide in his irisless eyes. Silonius brought Incarnus close, the movement almost gentle. She stared. It was the most delicately violent thing she had ever seen.
"Do not do that again," said Silonius quietly to the psyker.
He dropped Incarnus to the floor, without waiting for a response, and walked to where Orn stood. The two left, leaving Miss Madra the only person to hear Incarnus's breath bubbling between his broken teeth. Signal Relay Station, 18956, Trans-Mercury Debris Shoal. The last thing Silonius saw before the memory took him was the pulse of the compartment lights from the shuttlecraft. The shapes of the rest of the team blinked in his eye, and then the past yanked him away.
"Come with me, brother."
The summons had come as such things always did, without warning. He had been resting, allowing the healing flesh of his body to ache while his mind focused on the movements of stripping his weaponry down to the smallest parts. He sat in the center of an explosion of components arranged in a series of circles. The deck beneath him was still and quiet, the tremor of the Sigma's engine